All right, thank you everybody for joining us for another episode of Boxed Wine and Witchcraft. I have with me today Miss Holly again.
Oh, hello. I'm so happy to be back.
Right. And we are discussing what Beltane today.
Right. The last time when we talked about Imbolc, I was sort of like so excited. And I mentioned that Beltane was coming up, and it is like one of my absolute favorite times of the year. When the wheel turns to May 1st, I know that like we've made it, we've all survived through winter, and that spring and rebirth are on the way for real this time. So there's not just a little inkling of it. It is in full bloom. So I'm going to just, you know, talk a little bit about the history. I'm sort of a mythology geek, so I'll give you a little history of Beltane and the archetypes of the Green Man and the May Queen, and then we'll talk a little bit about like what I do, and you know, because I think part of this is to make it your own, definitely, and then talk a little bit about celebration and you know stones that go with and that sort of thing. So
sounds like a plan.
Yes.
As I'm staring out the partially blinded window, yes, like there's indeed some sun today.
There's sun. I know. I had my window down here, and I was just like, oh, it's amazing. Life is happening again.
So right. Well, and I kind of don't want to be inside today, right, to be
indeed
honest with you.
I hear you. I completely understand. So for those of you who don't know, or those of you who celebrate, May Day is, of course, a European, it's a Celtic holiday again. I have, of course, a Celtic background in my, obviously, my genealogy and in my practice. So Beltane is really, it was celebrated in most of the Celtic world, in Ireland and Scotland and the Isle of Manx. And every area has a little bit, you know, historically a little bit different celebration style. Just like the Celts weren't just one group of people. I know a lot of times we think, oh, they were just in Ireland, they were just in Scotland, right?
Yeah, that's usually the perception.
Right, but no. Historically, the Celts were from Portugal all the way into Turkey. And so we have just like that moniker, like European, it engulfs a lot of different cultural makeups that make up a whole. So we have like French. I just got back from France with my daughter Violet, and I'll have to tell you more stories about this because I had some spiritual adventures there too. So stay tuned. You know, the Gauls originally were French Celts. And so they have a different, like, for instance, creation story that involves Ioce the sea mare and her son Cernunnos. So there's a lot of different variants. So when we talk about something like Beltane that is celebrated, it's a turning of the Celtic wheel that is celebrated across all of these subcultures. There's a lot of different versions, and there's a lot of different like sort of archetypes that like the Green Man and the May Queen can sort of, they're kind of conglomerates of a lot of different goddesses and goddesses. So it's cool because if you are interested in, I know, you know, modern Wiccans celebrate the turning of the wheel, but also there's a lot of different, you know, wonderful versions of the story, and the way that I think it's always important to make it your own. You know what I mean? Find your roots, find your spirituality, and make it your own. So the historically, May Day, or it's celebrated on the 1st of May, of course, and it is the halfway point between the spring equinox or Ostara and then the summer solstice Lytha. So it's right in between. It's really the marking of the beginning of summer and just a reawakening of everything that started in those first few flowers that were coming up and, you know, in amongst the snow. And it's sort of like a return of the light for real this time. And
for real, I mean, in Ohio, we're like
in Ohio, even
we're ending sixth winter
for real. So, it's Beltane itself was, Irish word that translates as bright fire. And of course, I'm sure most of you, this is a fire festival, 100%. And so what that means is, of course, as the wheel turns, we're getting more and more light. Started in Yule when that, you know, was the shortest night, and the light started to come back and creep every single day, you know. Mm-hmm. And so now we're in fruition of the return of the light. And so with that comes, of course, you know, the Celts, they lived off the land. They believed in cyclical time. They believed in, there wasn't a beginning and an end. That if you look outside and you're living off the land and everything dies in the winter, and then spring comes and everything is reborn, then you see that and you kind of bring that to your spirituality as well. And so they saw real energy, that Orin Mor that continues and never leaves. And I think that's a very beautiful concept, and it's very mm-hmm. connected with nature. And so all of these festivals are highly connected with nature. So the bright fire, originally the Druids and the peoples would light fires. And it was really interesting because what would happen is at that time they didn't have an electric oven. Okay, obviously they had the hearth, they had the cauldron. So they would, you know, that's how you not only stayed warm, but how you cooked your meals, et cetera. So all of the townspeople, the community, would actually put out their fires and their hearth, which is a symbolic act of like, that's your survival. So you put those out because it's the ending. It's sort of the ending of winter, of that, you know, like needing that to survive. And so it's a rebirth, a re-cleansing. So the Druids and the trans people would build a central gigantic fire, this huge bonfire that was, of course, literal, but it was also symbolic, because this is a this is a rebirth fire. This is we're all coming back to life, just like the trees and you know, the blossoms and all the flowers. I mean, people are part of nature. And so like, it was a very symbolic. And so like, then all of the members of the community would go and they would take a fire like from that community fire and then relight their own hearths. And it was definitely a symbolic act that, I mean, this was tying the community together. This was, you know, mm-hmm. we're in this together, and life continues. And I think that's quite a beautiful thought.
It's like the original It Takes a Village.
Yeah, it totally is. It totally is. Mm-hmm. And so part of that was not only the people reuniting, the survival, but then this is the time when they would put their livestock had been, you know, basically housed for the winter. And, you know, so then they would put them out to the pasture. But before they did that, they're so connected with the spirituality that they would pass them through or around this big community fire as a cleansing, as a purification, as a rebirth, and then send them out to pasture. So it was kind of, you know, I always think that, you know, the modern world has all of these wonderful things, technology, all of these things, but right. I feel like connecting with these kind of roots is so important. It just makes so much more sense to me, mm-hmm. that idea of like, you know, being close to nature and reuniting with nature, not losing that, because like we are all like, sometimes I feel like a hamster on a wheel, you know,
and day to day, like, yeah, technology,
totally,
work.
And just, you know, you go to work, you make dinner, and I'm like, it really kind of like, this time of year is so important to me. I think especially as I get older, to say, hey, you need to slow down. You need to take time for your family, for yourself, and reconnect to nature, because, you know, it's important for not only your physical life, but your spiritual life as well. So mm-hmm. Anyway, obviously this was a time of joy, of jubilation. So there was also a lot of, as Celts love to party, a lot of partying. So it wasn't just like, so there was drinking and merrymaking and food and celebration, because we, you know, surviving the winter was a big deal when you don't have an electric heater and you don't have those things, you know. So, of course, it was one of the most important festivals of the year. And it even survives into today. For a while in Scotland, it sort of like early 19th century, it sort of started, you know, because of that industrialization and everything, you know, they sort of lost ties with nature.
Right.
But then in the, you know, 80s, people started to realize, hey, this isn't that really that great. We need some spirituality in our lives. And so there, there's a actually part of the like it's a historical society that has reenacted an actual countrywide event in Scotland, which I would love to attend at some point in my life, but it's kind of amazeballs. But anyway, you know, I feel very blessed to have come to this in my own like spiritual path, and that you know, to continue this. And so basically, you know, all families were very connected in this. Again, I think that it was definitely a time when young people who were interested in each other would dance the maypole. They would, and of course, that was, you know, it looks pretty. It's a maypole with strings and everyone's dancing, but it is, of course, a phallic symbol. And of course, it has everything to do with basically sexuality and pairing up and that sort of thing. So you better believe that, of course, during all of this joy and partying and celebration, people were frolicking in the woods, and I'll just leave it at that.
this is an all-age podcast.
Right, exactly. But, you know, there's nothing wrong with that, because Lord knows that's part of, you know, enjoying life. And so definitely there, it was a time of, you know, joy, renewed energy, life, creation, revelry, sexual energy, all of these things, and just sort of casting off all of the darkness and sort of like the dead limbs of winter, and it's both symbolically and literally. And so the May Queen, and I started to talk about this. So of course we had sort of, there's sort of like a, almost a passion play that was reenacted in these celebrations. So they would actually have people that would be physical representations of the May Queen and the Green Man, like in a lot of these communities. And it still goes on even today. So the May Queen is kind of like, she's ushering in the summer by really transforming the Green Man. Now, and we talked about this a little bit, like how I've always loved the Green Man. Mm-hmm. And so it's kind of like when you think of the Green Man, like, what do you like? What do you think of? Like,
I mean, the first thing that I think of is, you know, I grew up an army brat, and when we got sent over to Germany, the one hotel that we were staying in Landstuhl, like behind them were these little stumps, and they were carved into different faces.
Cool.
And that started my obsession. Yeah. So I always kind of think back to that.
Yeah.
But, in learning that, I was always shocked to like find his face portrayed differently as the seasons go, because you really only see it in the leafy green.
Right, exactly.
You don't see it as much, you know, in those other season representations.
And that's really cool, because like you, we were saying earlier, the Celtic world was, it, you know, Germany, that was part Celt. I mean, that was all Celt. So it's really cool, like the different versions that you see. So like I said, it isn't like that whole idea of agreement is like archetype. It is that forest spirit that there's something in the forest that is both wild and natural and connected to nature, but also the unknown. You know, there's, you know, there's a little fear. Sometimes the Green Man freaks people out a little bit if they don't know, you know, like, but in the like sort of passion plays that that live out, the May Queen is really the one. She's sort of based on really Bridget. So in the old Celtic stories, I think I've alluded to this in some of the podcasts before, that we had the Caillac, which was the winter's hag. So she ruled the winter's hag with her consort, the winter king. But they're always consorts. They're not quite up to par to the goddess, quite frankly. So So anyway, when in the spring during Imbolc, as the tale goes, the Caillac would turn to stone and return to the earth into a nature spirit. And then Bridget would reawaken. Mm-hmm. And then this is the fruition of, so the May Queen is based on, I would say, different archetypes of like, of, and Bridget is certainly one of them that is associated with her. And basically the May Queen is not too pleased with the Green Man, because the Green Man comes to this hill where they're going to, you know, meet, and he is acting awfully arrogant and awfully full of himself, because he's forgotten about the goddess and that she gave, what she has given to him. And so as part of this passion play, he comes in and he looks a hot mess. He looks like a typical guy that hasn't shaved in a month, and his hair's everywhere and his branches are all awry and he looks terrible.
Right.
And so when he comes, he is being arrogant and she is not very pleased with him at all. You know, she is put out with him. So he reaches out for whatever reason. He cleans himself up a bit and he reaches out to her because he thinks they, you know,
he's made up.
Right.
No.
But the big no-no is that you don't touch the May Queen without her permission.
Oh, I like her even more.
Yeah. And she immediately kills him because of this.
Oh.
But
brownie points.
Mm-hmm. But then all of her handmaids lift him up. And usually, even in the plays today, that they would strip him literally, and he would be supported and raised up by female handmaids of the May Queen.
Okay.
And lifted up, and then she would, on her own terms, basically revive him, and bring him back to life. And then he would start over, and he would then be. You know, he would be the green man again, and he wouldn't be this arrogant the twerp. And then she would welcome him back into as her consort, because you don't mess with her.
That was the ultimate, mm-hmm. Like, what did I say?
Uh-huh. Exactly. So then basically the two of them then usher in, they both go together, and there's a renewed understanding between how nature works. And they go and they light all of the fires and renew and usher in summer. So that is the story of the Green Man and the May Queen. Go May Queen.
That's right.
So
May Queen goals.
Indeed. So I personally, I've celebrated this a great deal of my life. And I love this time of year. I always make, of course, an offering of some sort, an herbal offering. Also, you know, I like to, you know, manifest during this time historically. And I believe that the veil is between the other side, you know, between loved ones and between the fae and the other side are open during certain times of the year, being, you know, Samhain and definitely this time of the year and Liva. So I always make offerings. I leave cake and wine for the fairies. And Violet and I have been doing that since she was just tiny. And I enjoy to have family and friends over to have May wine. Often any sort of flowers that you find, I like to harvest flowers right out of, you know, my front yard. Mm-hmm. And violets, pansies, Johnny jump ups are all edible. So heads up on that, you guys. You can make a beautiful, beautiful even liqueur with the violets. I can hook you up, sister. And you can make a May wine with all of these edible flowers and sweet woodruff, which is currently growing in my front yard as well. And it's wonderful. Add some, you know, fresh strawberries, and it's just wonderful. And I always like to make, you know, maybe fresh bread. I like to make fresh salads with, you know, different, different, you know, herbs and that sort of thing, just to a renewal with, you know, the natural world, the earth, you know,
and have fun.
It's marvelous. And then I also, of course, on my altar, I like to have different crystals, etc. And I think that anything that really connects with you, and I think that come into the store, there are tons of us that can, you know, definitely can help. But I think that I always like to go with the energy of the time. And I think that that is like rebirth. So I always have like either some sort of yellow, orange calcite. I usually have carnelian for fire mm-hmm. element, return of the sun, that sort of thing. And then I like to connect with the earth. So like probably oak moss for, you know, the green, even green adventuring, things that sort of connect with the earth. And then, this is a time of joy. And if you're looking for a relationship or something like this, this is a time, or maybe possibly trying, you know, thinking of a child, that, you know, pregnancy, that sort of thing.
It's a bad word right now,
but just in case there's anyone anyone out there that might be interested. You know, definitely Ruby and or Garnets. I'm sorry, not Ruby, Garnets and. I'm trying to think of Fire Quartz is wonderful, I think, too, for those time. And
probably Flower Agate.
Yes, that's what I was trying to get out of my brain. But anything, you know, there's a lot of different ones. And like I said, there are certain ones that are associated with Beltane, but I think also like make it your own at every celebration. Make it your own. Come in, look around, see what feels right to you. And, you know, I hope that everyone out there, well, I often don't just celebrate in one day. It becomes sort of like a, you know what I mean? Like a seasonal kind of thing. Like this is the beginning of this. And then
it's like day one.
Yeah. And it takes me to, you know, till I'm looking to Lyva, to, you know, the longest day of the year with the sun at the, you know, highest point of summer. So, but, you know, celebrate with friends and family and definitely take time for yourself, renew and reconnect with life. I mean, it's just, it's been a long couple of years with COVID and just the winter's been gray and, you know, and it's time for all of us to feel better in body and spirit. So, I hope that all of you enjoyed this and I hope very much that, you know, wish a lot of blessings to everyone.
And I'm sure we'll be able to rope you in for a Lyva.
Yeah, I would love, Lyva is also one of my faves. Dare I say, I love fairy festivals. I love, you know, joy and celebrations and dare I say wine.
Wine
is a good thing.
Exactly. We just had the weed. Wow. Mead. I don't even smoke. Mead. Wait. Jeez. Cut all that out. Mead making class.
Oh, I know. I'm kind of a bum that I missed that because I'm hoping next time to be part of that.
Yeah.
I was excited about that.
We'll have it again. And I noticed on this website, because I'm like, oh, we should do, you know, some of these classes again. Yeah. You had like moonshine. And I'm like,
oh my word.
But sir,
right.
Why was this not on?
Right, exactly.
So I'm going to have to get a hold of Tom the Tall.
Yeah.
As I call him. Yeah. Well, thank you everyone for joining us and learning a little more in-depth history, you know, of this fun day upon us.
So fun.
Yeah. And we'll be back again later.
Okay. Bye everyone.